Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 301. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight, we have Harrison Milfeld.
What's up, everybody?
And we have Infendo writer Colin Crompton.
Hello, everyone.
On tonight's show, we have three main segments for you. We're going to start off with what we've been playing, move on to the Nintendo news covering the most recent Nintendo Direct, and finally finish off with your community comments. To start with what we've been playing, Colin, would you like to go through and tell us what you've been playing?
Yeah, I'd love to. Mostly playing quite a bit of Monster Hunter lately, which is the game that keeps on giving. Yeah, not much to say about it really, it's just I'm playing on 3DS. About just over 500 hours, and yeah.
I feel like I'm the only one here who's not been getting in on the whole action when it comes to Monster Hunter right now, and it's a series I respect, but it's just, I don't know why I've actually just not gotten to the point of, like, picking this thing up.
It's got a very high learning curve, that's the trouble with the series.
Mm.
And we seem to be the latecomers here, because obviously the game's been out for quite a while, but we've only started really, really talking about it.
Yeah, I've only picked it up about 3 or 4 months ago. And I was just burning through it.
Well, yeah, that's a very impressive amount of time for the period of time you've had the game.
Yeah, once it grabs you, it hooks you. It really does.
That's right, I was just wondering, is there anything in particular which helps you kind of drive you through the game if you are unable to get into that online multiplayer?
I just love the challenge of trying to do it by yourself. I've always loved games that have been difficult. So I relish that sort of challenge as it is.
And it does have that kind of very clear quest structure to it.
It does, yeah.
So, and also, on another note, because it's the 3DS version, have you had many, if at all, street passes of this game?
Quite a few street passes, but it doesn't really add much. It just means you can look at the guild cards and they appear in the Fort Tanzia.
That's right. Yeah, and there's a specific reason I'm trying to get guild cards currently, because there's this particular armor set which requires you to send people you've had swapped guild cards with off to do those missions in order for them to come back with some bug types that which you can't get in any other way in the game.
Yeah, that armor set is very difficult to get. I'm really
towards it. I've crafted one of the pieces for it.
Well done.
And yeah, that's it, and I've pretty much got almost everything else needed, but these, I think they're the dragon butterflies or something similar to that. But yeah, they are a real pain to get hold of. So beyond Monster Hunter, has there been anything else you've picked up or downloaded recently?
Recently, not really. I'm going through like games I got a fair while ago now. I would say the only thing I downloaded recently was Steel Diver.
That is a good point to jump into.
Playing quite a bit online, it's quite good. I really enjoy it. I've never played Steel Diver before. It's my first time handling the game.
Yeah. We should probably quickly mention here, so Steel Diver Sub Wars was one of the things which came out of the Nintendo Direct that we'll talk about after this segment. But this is essentially a free-to-play game, which they released on the same time they announced it. Yeah. You can download it for free. You get 2 offline missions, and you get access to the full online mode, and you can upgrade it to the full version of the game for $10, I believe, and that gives you access to the full 7 story missions, and you get more subs to use for the multiplayer modes.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so has it tempted you to upgrade yet, or are you still enjoying the free model?
It has tempted me, because I played online with a few people, just for doing random matches, and some of the submarines, they clearly got the full version, the premium version. But they look really good. The game's graphics are amazing. I was looking at it thinking they've got a real good advantage. Because on the free version, you kind of get two submarines once you complete two story missions with most of the medals. But yeah, it's a great, great game. I really enjoy it. And I will be picking up the full version at some point.
That's cool. I've also downloaded this. It's a weird choice, I think, because they did pre-announce that Steel Diver was the franchise they were going to use to kind of test the freemium model. And it's weird that they don't jump straight into things like, you know, Mario or Pokemon or something like that. But it is also quite cool that they've gone out their way to create something new for this new type of, not really game experience, but a new delivery method, a new way to package it up. But what I also thought was quite cute is kind of like the little sales rabbit who sells those Street Pass games. We have a rabbit as well trying to sell you the premium version of this, which also references himself or similarities to Pepe Hare.
Yeah.
Which he does look like.
I saw that and I thought, Star Fox reference. Brilliant.
He does look quite cool. And I liked how he actually mentioned it himself.
I think that's enough reason for me to pick up the premium version now.
Yeah, I reckon that's enough for a lot of people, actually. Just that self-referential, you know. Yeah. This is.
Can the subs do a barrel roll, though? That's the question.
Unfortunately, no.
No, it's unfortunately not. But yeah, the game is entirely in first person, unlike the previous game, which was this side view game. But it seems to have the same controls on that bottom touchscreen. So you kind of adjust your height through an actual, like, a depth slider. You've got, like, a steering wheel, as it were, to, you know, steer itself. And you have a separate sliding bar to change your acceleration, whether you're going, you know, forwards or backwards or, you know, just stationary in the middle. It does feel, you know, it does make the game feel quite a bit different, controlling it that way and not through traditional buttons. There is button input. You can kind of adjust the sliders using, you know, just the buttons on the system itself. But it is very strategic. It's very thoughtful. And it does take a little while to get your head around it and to get into the rhythm of the game. But it does feel different. It does feel just like something new and fresh. And it's pretty cool. So I like the fact that they are using this freemium model and they are using something new to try it out. It's hard not to recommend this to someone in terms of, you know, download it, play it if you like it. There's, you know, more fun to have if you go out and buy it. But if you don't end up liking it, you know, there's no damage done. You beyond the time you've put in to play the game, it hasn't cost you a thing. And I think that's cool. I like to see Nintendo doing, you know, these things as well as just doing their big boxed releases.
Yeah. I'll definitely recommend people go and pick it up and play it. Definitely give it a chance.
Yeah, and it is cool that it has that really, although I've not played it yet, it's got a big focus on the online multiplayer mode.
Yeah, sure.
More of that from Nintendo, the better in my book.
Oh, yeah.
So on my side, I've also been playing some of the latest Professor Layton. So I finally got around to starting the final entry in his series. And like the previous Layton games, there's not a huge amount different about it. However, they have really upped the presentation, even beyond the previous 3DS title, which obviously made the big jump from 2D Layton to a 3D polygonal Layton. But this one seems they've gone full out in terms of there's a lot more cutscenes than before, a lot more voice acting as before. You can tell from the get-go that there's going to be a much more bigger variety in different locations, because without giving any spoilers, the story kind of sets itself that you're going to have to be kind of globe-trotting to find different things to solve this really, you know, ultimate puzzle. And the really cool thing about it, again, without going into details, is the story of this game actually makes sense of the previous games. And it's tying them all together, which I didn't think this series was going to do. And it even involves the movie, if you've ever seen it, but it won't ruin it if you've not. So yeah, it's like, these, like, that mystery you're doing on that game and that what we did at the movie and this, actually, it's all coming together and it's this for this one big thing, which is really cool. I'm really interested to see how they're going to kind of, you know, finish this, especially as it's, you know, a prequel to the original game. But yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying this. The difficulty of the puzzle seems to be a bit trickier just from the get-go as well on this one, which is a good thing. This being the, you know, the sixth game in the series. So I like how they're giving you this kind of difficulty threshold that, you know, if you're picking up this game, you probably have played a couple of the others. Let's make it so difficult to start with, and we'll just drive from there and see how far we can get with it. So, yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying that game so far. And it's just got that perfect Professor Layton vibe and the music and the graphics, and you can just kind of... It's a nice world to get dragged into every time one of these games come out. So I know this one's not released in America yet, but it's definitely a good Layton game.
I've got to ask a question. Is there a greater variety in the puzzles in this one?
There is so far. Yeah, there is a good variety. There's, you know, some of those question-type puzzles where you're just going through the text and you've got to come up with some sort of answer, but it's not like, you know, I know that like a couple of the original games you would pick from, you know the ABCD type answers. Yeah. But no, they're much more involved.
That's good.
And I was just impressed with how much time they must have spent on these individual puzzles as well, because they've all got like a 3D element going up on the touchscreen. So just the presentation values, even in the puzzles, just seem to be through the roof. And so yeah, all the puzzles kind of, so far at least, I'm not hugely far into the game, do have a nice variety to them and just the different, you know, just the different sort of things you're doing. It's not like, you know, in this puzzle you're sliding things around in one way and in another puzzle you're sliding things around to solve something else. But, you know, just lots of different types of puzzles themselves, which is what you want, really.
Yeah, sounds good.
So I think we'll move on now. Harrison, what have you been playing?
Still been playing NES Remix right now, and as we get further on the show, whatever, I'm quite excited that we're actually getting another addition to it as well. But been kind of just, you know, pick up and play segments in here, just trying to 3-star every of these little segments. But, you know, I'm just more pointed to getting those Remix levels, like, unlocked, you know, one being what was the first one I played? It was the original Mario Brothers, not Super Mario Brothers, but the Mario Brothers arcade, where it said, you know, defeat three enemies, and the screen moves out. So basically your plane of view is just getting smaller and smaller and smaller as this thing's widening out. And at this point, I'm just not sure what I'm doing. But that was one I had a little bit of difficulty getting onto. But
the one I was asking about on last week's show.
Yeah.
That game seems to stand out the first time you play it.
It like, I had a couple of my friends who were... I picked it up, but I got off work, and they're out drinking, at the house. And they were just kind of freaking out by what was going on the screen right now. And the point I told them, like, oh, this is just a Remix level right now. It's just stuff to mess with your head. Other ones I kind of enjoyed were from, like, Super Mario Brothers, where it's like, get to the flagpole. I was like, oh, this sounds simple enough. But I'm not controlling Mario as I'm going through. I have to control my jumps. And that took me quite a few times to actually get down as far as in there. But
yeah, so they essentially turned Mario into an auto-runner on those stages, which I thought was quite cool. Yeah, he's just running on his own. All you're doing is pressing A to jump. So it's like they've taken back from the so many iPhone games which have stolen from Mario.
you owe it to them right now. Our developers, you owe it to that game right now, or that level in particular. No, it's just like, that's what I've been sitting out on until Tropical Freeze comes out. So, yeah, not much actually is doing anything else but that.
So, yeah, it's interesting. There's a few things we mentioned which do tie into this Nintendo Direct, which we'll jump into now. So there were many things actually announced, which is quite cool. They started the show off by showing off a new Smash Bros. Character. So the character they unveiled was Little Mac from the Punch-Out series. And he came with his own, you know, brand new trailer in this really cool kind of cel-shaded, almost Street Fighter-like style.
That's what I thought it was at first. Yeah. Like, before, like, when I watched the video, like, I saw the silhouette of the fighter, and my first thought thinking, like, are they unveiling Ryu on here?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the music started playing. I was like, oh, it's Little Mac, even better.
I thought it was Jin, because in Tekken 4, he was the hood. I was like, it's Jin. Oh, great, he's a Smash Bros. Well, Namco's developing it, so, okay.
Yeah, I'd still be surprised if we don't see any Tekken characters go into this.
You think we will?
I reckon we'll see one of them.
Yeah. I thought it'd be good if they were like an assist trophy, but that's about it.
Yeah, but obviously it's hard to say with Nintendo, but I reckon Namco will be able to get, well, at least one of their characters in. Maybe it's not him, maybe it's Pac-Man. He's been alongside Mario in the Mario Kart arcade games, which I don't think any of us would have played.
Nope.
So just to start off with this, so what do we think about Little Mac, his appearance into Smash Bros?
Could be overpowered, I could say. I do like how what they're kind of doing, these newer characters, like, you know, Mega Man in particular, where you're giving all the different Robot Master moves in this one. Little Mac has a power meter, for instance, and I'm not sure if that's going to translate more into the other characters or not, but it's I do like how you can just build that up through fighting and stuff, whatever, but, I mean, it's kind of getting more and more to each of these these people on the roster, the characters on the roster, that they're given these different, you know, type of move sets. I mean, well, not only move sets, but, you know, powers, like, you know, abilities that you can only, like, build up a certain amount of energy for them to, like, you know, to use. And that's what I'm really liking, how this character could probably be out there, even though I hope he's not as so much as overpowered like we have with Meta Knight, who I'm still set his probably not making a return.
I don't know, he's a Kirby character and Sakurai's making it. I've got a suspicion he may make a return, whether he's neutered or not. But yeah, I think Little Mac is the only character who has his own type of power meter of some sort added in there. And it appears, I think through some of the analysis videos, that once that power meter is filled, that attack is an instant KO, regardless of percentage the opponent you're hitting has. As long as you can land that attack, they get KO'd literally out of the arena. So that is going to be huge if that's the case.
Yeah, he's a walking home run bat.
Exactly. So he's got to have some very significant, you know, disadvantages if he's got this, you know, awesome ability just to knock people out, which in theory he can charge as many times as he wants in duration of a single match. So it's looking like he's only going to be of, you know, any he's only going to be any good on the ground. He's not going to be any good at all for the air type combat. It looks like his recoveries are going to be pretty rubbish too. But I'm thinking that there's going to be some more significant things than that they're going to have to pull to, or make that kind of instant KO move really, really tricky to pull off. But it should be interesting to see how, you know, just what characters people could gather to when this game finally comes out. So we'll move on over now to a Kirby-related piece of news, which is the 3DS game Kirby's Triple Deluxe now has a release date for America and Europe, which is the May 2nd for America and May 16th for Europe. And they showed some new footage for this game, and it looks like it's shaping up pretty well. It looks like it's kind of taking that Kirby's Adventure type gameplay and bringing that to the 3DS, as well as, you know, a bunch of new powers and new game modes and collectibles, and it seems pretty good use of the 3D, being able to jump from, you know, one area of the level to, you know, the background and back and forth using that old trick. I think this game is shaping up quite nicely.
Is it really kind of odd that this is, well, we'll get more, like, another 3DS title that we'll be talking about later on is getting released in the same day? Don't you kind of wish that would be a little bit more spread out?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Nintendo's release strategy is a bit bizarre. They have recently just been kind of, you know, announcing new stuff and saying it's, you know, going to be out even now or in, you know, a couple months' time. And we were saying earlier, like, you know, back at last E3, they were revealing big titles that were going to be their big holiday hits, like, you know, Mario 3D Worlds, and there doesn't seem to be any reason why they won't be following through with that plan this year as well. It makes some sense that they're going to be squeezing the stuff we know about out fairly close together, because there's, you know, the stuff in the future we just don't know about yet, and they're just going to announce and then release a couple months afterwards. We do get these patches of time where there's not much coming out from Nintendo, and then there's a whole bunch of stuff coming out at the same time, and it seems it could be managed a little bit better. This is a Kirby game I'm actually looking forward to quite a bit. It looks a lot more Kirby-like than like Kirby's Adventure was for the Wii, in terms of it seems a bit more original, and it doesn't seem to be just repackaged, and I don't know, I'm just getting a better vibe from this game, which is cool. However, the next thing they announced was a follow-up to NES Remix. So NES Remix 2. And this is going to obviously come out for the Wii U like the original game did. Comes out in a couple months' time. And it's going to feature all new remixes from essentially the next generation of NES games. I don't have the full list in front of me, but it included games like Kirby's Adventure on the NES, Zelda 2. If anyone can remember any of the games from the Remix 2 reel, jump in and let me know.
Metroid.
Of course, yes. Oh, Kid Icarus as well.
Zelda 2. I believe...
Is there any
golf?
Mario games in there?
There is Super Mario Bros. 3.
Oh, of course, yes. That would be a good one.
Mm-hmm. And these are actually a lot better as far as what the first offering had on there, because that was one of the few complaints I heard from that, whatever, is that there were not enough games, like a lot of the games on there you didn't want to play were games like that, well, I never really enjoyed.
Yeah, they wouldn't be anyone's, you know, like a dozen picks if they had, you know, this project to plan themselves. And we said it on our show previously, and we weren't alone in this voice, but we were saying that we would hope that they would do some sort of follow-up to this and just do a pick from a bunch of, you know, later NES games or games from a different platform entirely. So it is cool that they are doing this.
Mm. And I would kind of like to see if they, even though I'll be clamoring for a Super Nintendo remix or a N64 remix or something like that, but if they were to do a third one, go a little bit more obscure. Think about, like, Star Tropics or something like that.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Just also, yeah, picking from games like that. And I hope they do run with this series, because then you would get those sort of picks, because they would have to go obscure at some point, because they would have covered, like, the mainstreams. They would definitely, you know, Nintendo's got this huge catalogue. There would be plenty of games to pick from. They just, you know, have to start exploring these kind of weirder territories or the not-so-obvious territories. And it would be cool to see what they come out with and get to see some of these older, not-so-revisited games get some love.
We are forgetting, though, in NES Remix 2, they will have a mode called Super Luigi Bros.
Well, of course we are, yes.
Yes, and for those who don't know, or did not see, this mode will basically be the same, a Luigi-themed version of Super Mario Brothers, where the entire level, like the entire game, is mirrored. So instead of going from right, you're going to left. You'll be able to control Luigi, whatever, with his own abilities in there, such as like a higher jump.
Yeah, so that alone is quite a decent value add to this proposition. Because obviously just the value of, say, the virtual console price for Super Mario Bros., if you deduct that from NES Remix, that's still a substantial discount there. So if you just think you're getting that in addition and assume it's going to be the same sort of price, then sounds pretty good to me. So we'll move on now, and it's just a similar theme of revisiting old games. Nintendo finally was ready to talk about their GBA plans in terms of the Virtual Console coming out to the Wii U. And so they've officially announced now that you'll be able to start downloading GBA games on April. They have announced what the lineup will be for the West and for Japan. The details for Japan are a lot more detailed, in fact. But what we have to look forward to are Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga, Metroid Fusion, and Yoshi's Island Super Mario Advance 3.
Which, by the way, I think when that, when Yoshi's Island was released on the Virtual Console on the Wii, it was actually that version, I believe. Because Touch Fuzzy Get Dizzy level and the was never mentioned in or never put into the Game Boy Advance version.
No, that is correct. So it's weird. I mean, yeah, the Game Boy Advance version did have some additional content in terms of additional levels. But yeah, there was some bits that they had to cut back on, like, yeah, the infamous, you know, Touch Fuzzy Get Dizzy effect.
I love that level as a kid, even though when people older, when we watch me play that game, they're just like, what is this? I'm like, I don't know.
I can understand it myself.
So yeah, in terms of the Japanese plans, and we might get, it's possible that we're getting a peek into, you know, our future releases here, but they have given out two sets of games. Games which will be available on the launch of the service, and then some games which will be available a bit afterwards. So in terms of their launch, they're getting Super Mario Advance 2, Super Mario World, WarioWare, Inc., Mega Micro Games, Kirby and the Amazing Mirror, Golden Sun, F-Zero Maximum Velocity, and this game I hadn't even heard of, but it's a Japanese exclusive, which is called Advance Wars 1 and 2.
You've never played Advance Wars?
Well, yeah, I've played Advance Wars, but I didn't know they released both as a single game in Japan. So that would be an awesome download. Mm. So they're getting all of those on April 3rd. And then on April 30th, they're getting another round of games, which is Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga, The Legend of Zelda Minish Cap, Mario Tennis Power Tour, Wario Land 4, Kirby Nightmare and Dream Land, and then finally Metroid Fusion. So that's a fairly nice group of games on both of those bits for Japan there. So hopefully there might be some suggestion that we're going to see the GBA virtual console come down in, you know, bigger packages in terms of the amount of games they'll be releasing on a weekly or bi-weekly basis.
If they want to improve the virtual console service, they got to do that. And that I want to know is, why can't we get these on the 3DS?
Well, there is that. That question is, yeah, very important as well. Because obviously it's a portable system. Why can't we play it on the portable, which also has an emulator and has given out Game Boy Advance games as part of an ambassador program?
Oh, I was going to say that. It's a very odd choice. The only reason I can think of is it's to help boost Wii U sales.
That makes some sense, but you would think if that was honestly their strategy, they would do whatever they could to, you know, open the floodgates in terms of just virtual console in general for the Wii U. If they think it's any type of push, all their first-party content and just release it on Wii U and say, get a Wii U, you can download all our back catalogue. But they don't, so it's weird. Sorry, Harrison, you were going to say something.
I just mentioned it just kind of continuing on about, you know, just the lack of any mentioning of, like, putting Game Boy Advance titles on the 3DS. It's just, like Colin mentioned, it could be, it's like, oh, maybe they're trying just to build up a better base for, like, the Wii U as far as, hey, if you want these, you got to buy this console, which I don't know. It's a very odd business idea. And plus, that long-rumored connectivity between a 3DS and the Wii U, who knows what you could probably do with that. Maybe you would just be able to download it digitally onto your 3DS where you can have it for a day or something like that, or just some type of, like, way to actually make this work. I mean, it's possible, like you said, a bastard program, but really just mind-boggling why they're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, on the positive side of things, though, this is a very decent selection of games. I mean, compared to, you know, the normal choices we get from, you know, the Nintendo Entertainment System, Super Nintendo Entertainment System, N64, and so on, those games came out in drips and drabs in terms of quality. But pretty much all these games are pretty good releases. These are pretty much all top-tier games. So, we've got Mario & Luigi, we've got Mario Advance, WarioWare, Advance Wars, F-Zero, Golden Sun for Japan on launch of the service as well. These are some fantastic games to just be starting the service with. And I'm glad that they're not just picking out, you know, the first couple of Game Boy Advance games and using them to launch the service. And I hope we get some of these Japanese release games. I mean, I don't think we're going to be seeing that combo pack for Advance Wars, but I hope the fact that that's coming out is a sign that we'll get one or the other some point soon. I still think that would be a great game to play if it lets you play it, like, on the TV and on the gamepad at the same time. That would be cool, because once some person's taking their move, you can kind of look at the TV and plan your next attack if you can, like, see the map on there. And that would be pretty awesome, just using that simple mirror technique, and you could pass the gamepad back and forth. But there's a lot of good games here, so I'm getting a positive vibe out of this announcement, even though it's taken a little while to get to it. And I hope we get the 3DS parity at some point, and, you know, if we're looking on the bright side of things, it may be they're taking their time, so once they finally figure out a system where they can have it, where you buy in one system and you get it on the other one, maybe they can have that in place beforehand, before they launch on the 3DS. So anything you have bought on the Wii U, you can download. We'll have to wait and see on that one. Obviously, they haven't actually officially said anything about GBA games yet for the 3DS. And you never know, we might see something at E3, might see something in the some point in the future, but for now it's unknown. So the next thing I have on my list is Steel Diver Subwars, which we essentially covered in what we've been playing. So this was an eShop 3DS game. You can download it for free, and you can pay $10 to upgrade to premium, where you get extra single-player levels and extra subs that will help you out in multiplayer too. And we've kind of already gone for our initial impressions on this, so I'll jump straight through to the next one, which is Mario Golf World Tour. And so we have a North American release date of May the 2nd, and we've got a bit of new information about the game. It's going to have a similar communities feature to that Mario Kart 7 had. They reconfirmed that it's going to have online mode, and you're going to be able to... They had an emphasis of playing around the world, which sounds to me like region-free online, which is a good thing.
That'd be good.
Yeah, we have also online tournaments, which is pretty cool, and hopefully that's like a mode you can kind of play on and off, opposed to having to have your game running for an entire tournament with someone else. They also announced some details about the single-player mode. Unfortunately, it's not an RPG, but you can buy and win like items and accessories to dress up your Mii character, who would be playing you know, as the single-player game, which looked quite cool, and it looked like a better implementation than what Mario Tennis offered for the 3DS.
Yeah, that was one that I did get a little bit excited when it came out, but once the reviews trickled in, it was Nintendo really, or like who was behind that? I think it was like Camelot or Hudson.
I'm not entirely sure, actually. I think it possibly was Camelot, but I'm not confident to say.
I'm going to look that up right now. But yeah. No, it's just like, once the reviews came out for it, though, it just did not really, at the point, hit me for whatever, that they changed enough for it. I mean, but, yep, Camelot did develop it.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a shame, because the gameplay itself is good. I mean, like, it's a game I did pick up, but the one-player mode, it just seemed almost throwaway. I mean, it's okay, but it's not that fun playing, at least in my opinion, playing Mario Tennis against a computer. It's, you know, the fun, you know, getting your mate involved, and that works somewhat better if you get around a TV, but I don't know. It would have been nice to have some of those more RPG-type bits that the previous portable games had. Because, yeah, I remember sinking a load of time through those previous Mario Tennis and Mario Golf games on the Game Boy Color and even on the Game Boy Advance.
The Game Boy Advance game was really good.
Yeah. But yeah, so no RPG mode itself, but it seems like the single player is going to be a bit more fleshed out than Tennis was. But we'll see how that actually comes to fruition when the game comes out. So
yeah, if it does, when you have that single player, like, you know, tournament mode or whatever, like with your own Mii character, it seems like you can actually build up the character's stats on
That's
there,
right.
which... Thankfully, which is what I loved about the Game Boy Color version of Mario Golf, just because it was not only a good golf game, but a decent game with RPG, a good golf game with RPG elements.
Yeah, it was a very unique mix, and it'd be cool. I assume you'd be able to take those, you know, those stat enhanced characters to those online tournaments and those other online modes. And if there's a bit of back and forth, do you know, increasing your character offline and taking him online, I think that could work quite well. So the next thing they talk about, or the next thing we have on our list at least, is Mario Kart 8. So we had a brand new trailer, and what they were revealing about the game was the Koopalings have come to Mario Kart. So none of them have been left out. And so we have a big number boost in the amount of characters which are now in Mario Kart 8.
I think that, what is that, push it over like the roster right now to like 25?
Yeah, if there's any more characters, it's going to be the biggest one yet, because I think it's currently on the level of Wii was with the unlockables. And so, yeah, so I imagine there's some things, some characters that which haven't been mentioned yet, some unlockables to come, and so, yeah, it's going to have this kind of huge roster. Not it's that it's, you know, hugely needed in Mario Kart, but it'll be fun to pick around with.
I think with the next, well, we also got a release date, so this is coming up May 30th in the States, I believe. What was it? We'll be definitely having another direct, probably, I'd say, like, April or something like that, or even early May leading up, just to probably detail, like, the online to this, because I feel like, you know, Mario Kart Wii was the only, you know, Nintendo public, like, one of the only few Nintendo-developed and published titles that actually, a really good approach as far as to online when it comes to matchmaking and finding a good, like, a good match without any, like, hint of lag.
Yeah, I'm also kind of hoping that there will be some sort of OS update to go alongside it, like there was for Mario Kart 7 on the 3DS. Just to give you the feature where you can ask people to play the game who aren't actually playing the game, or you can at least check your friend list and see if anyone else is playing the game, and jump into their game from that menu, and it will launch the game and chuck you into that part. It would be really nice if they could add that into, you know, just onto the system level, and it will make you just getting matches together so much easier.
Mm.
But yeah.
And I hope so too.
Okay, next we have another freemium game. This one has been in Japan for now for quite some time, and it has been confirmed for an American release, which is Rusty's Real Deal Baseball. So this is the bizarre game you may have heard of, that where you can buy in, like, you can buy mini games which are all baseball themed, using real currency. But the kind of either the trick or the gimmick here is you can haggle down the real life prices from the virtual shopkeep by giving him items or listening to his stories, and get these microtransaction games for a, you know, real life cheaper cost. So
that's what kind of got me really. When I looked at that, when you can just haggle the price of like gloves, bats, items, and stuff from there, I'm like, is this like Nintendo's future when it comes to freemium games, where you can just haggle people? Like, well, NPCs, I'm trying to say.
Yeah, possibly, because they do seem to be trying to add this kind of almost humanized element to the payment system. Again, the Street Pass games, you had that little rabbit salesperson on Steel Diver, you've got that peppy hair, or peppy hair lookalike, who's bigging up the premium model, actually talking as a character, giving his opinion on it, opposed to it just jumping out to a shop level. And it seems that, yeah, this game here, you are actually talking to a character in the game who you have a, you know, some sort of relationship to in the game, a bit of back and forth, and you're giving exchanges, and they're going the ultimate thing here by making the character give the actual discounts on the game. So I'm finding it struggling to get too excited about this game purely because it's baseball themed, and I just don't have a huge love of baseball. I mean, I love the idea, but I mean, it really depends on the quality of the games itself. But in terms of just a visual theme, a style, it wouldn't draw me in for if anyone else was making this game. But it's the good thing. It is a freemium model. I could download it. It might win me over with its charms. And it would be cool to get that chance without having to, you know, risk out and, you know, paying a full release title to see if it's going to be any good or not.
Now, this is coming out in April, right?
Yeah, it's an April release for North America. But it's technically not being announced or have a release date yet for Europe. But I imagine it will come at some point. If we move on now, though, to another eShop game, which is coming out shortly. This is the final of the Guild Zero 1 games, which is Weapon Shop Dio Massi, which is a game where you play the role of a RPG shop owner, and you are forging weapons and items for, you know, heroes and so on who needs these weapons to go off on their adventures. It was, written by a Japanese comedian initially, and so I'm not sure how that's working with the localization, but apparently it's got a big emphasis on comedy in the game, and the actual mechanics of building the weapons is a rhythm mini game. So it is essentially a rhythm game where you got to match up the timing, match up the notes, and the better you do, the better item you create, and you can then sell this on and put it on your shops and sell it when someone comes in looking for it. So it's a game I'm actually quite excited for. It's just so...
Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's all right, go on.
I was just saying, yeah, I'm really excited for this game. To me, it looks one of the more interesting Guild Zero 1 games. So, yeah, I'll be picking this up when it comes out.
The real test of this game, I think, will be in the localization. If they can translate the comedy itself, if it is a really funny game and that does come across, I think that's just what's going to sell it or not. But I love this setup for this. It does sound really fun. And next up, we have another eShop. Oh, well, at least I believe it's an eShop game.
This was the part of the segment, I think, in the direct that where the eShop was heavily, you know, displayed. And I think when you have, even after Tropical Freeze comes out, whatever, for like the Wii U, and even with the 3DS right now, with like a couple of games coming out, like Yoshi's New Island in March, it seems like when you have with a bunch of the indie titles coming out as well, that's, I feel like Nintendo's trying to breach, or not breach, but, you know, to hold people over with, like, this slew of indie titles to keep people over until the next AAA title comes out.
Yeah, I think it's a decent strategy. I mean, if we had, like, an eShop in, like, the N64 or even some of the GameCube era, where we could be tied off with these, you know, little chunks of games in between the bigger releases, it would have meant waiting for certain games a lot easier. And I think it's helping out a lot here. I mean, if we cut back all these eShop games and we only had the box releases, you know, the gaps between those games would seem a lot longer, in my opinion. But this game in particular is it's called Pokemon Battle, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation for this, Tretzi, which is a puzzle game, which was part of a series of puzzle games which have come out. I'm not sure quite what to say about this game. I mean, it's not Puzzle League, which is my preferred Pokemon puzzle game. And so it is a tile slider, and it seems that you will be, you know, catching Pokemon in some variety in terms of they'll be appearing in your kind of puzzle grid, and if you can match up the right blocks around them, you can either defeat them or capture them. But then again, I'm not entirely sure if this is going to be a eShop only game or it is going to have a boxed release, which I wouldn't be awfully surprised at with the Pokemon brand behind it, because I believe that has been the how this series has come out in the past on the DS.
This one kind of, I mean, I was following everything, all like the when I was at work, whatever, I was following everything on Twitter, like the bits and pieces on there, and that was kind of one of the few videos eShop titles I wanted to check out, whatever, and this one, like you said, I mean, you're catching Pokemon in this tile-themed puzzle game, and each of the Pokemon that you're catching, and if you're battling with somebody else, like, say, one's battling with a water-type or a fire-type, water-type, basically, what you're battling with is, you know, more to your advantage. So, basically, everything from the main series Pokemon games as far as, you know, weaknesses and strengths come into play. And that, I think, you can able, like, evolve your Pokemon, I believe?
I'm not sure, to be fair. I wouldn't be surprised at this series. I mean, even games like in the Pokemon Pinball series, they had a surprising amount of connection to the actual games themselves in terms of not only were you capturing Pokemon, but you could evolve your road and you could do things on the side like that. And so, yeah, I mean, it's cool. I hope it's a game which has a demo. And I'm very curious if they will put any Pokemon Bank link into it, because if they don't, I think it'll be a missed opportunity.
Yeah,
I reckon there should be some sort of special Pokemon you should be rewarded with, either for just playing it, or just buying it, or just for unlocking it by completing the game, or something, or other.
That wouldn't be too bad of an idea, I think. Especially for the Pokemon that I've caught in, you know, wide right now, that would really put... I mean, imagine using the legendary... I want to know how the legendary Pokemon go into this, like, how it fits into this.
Yeah, exactly. That's something... I don't think you'd better put Pokemon into it from, say, your bank, but it would be cool if some games previously would reward you in some way of, you know, for just buying that game, that you could get this Pokemon you wouldn't be able to get normally in the series, and you could transfer it back to your main game. If they could add some hooks and any sort of spin-offs like that in the future, that would be cool. But nothing has been revealed yet. We continue our eShop theme here with Inazuma 11. So this is a series which has been out in Japan and in Europe for quite some time now, which is essentially a soccer-based RPG, which is now for the first time coming out into America. So this is going to be the original DS game, repackaged as a 3DS game. It has, you know, proper widescreen support. It's got the 3D, but it's being released as a discount on the eShop in both North America and Europe. And I believe you can download it right now if this interests you. And so this kind of came out of nowhere for America.
For someone who's grew up playing soccer, whatever, this one, the RPG elements for this one really caught me, is like, because I never knew about the series before until I saw this, and I do like how it's implementing a story into it as well, and you're building your team up as far as ability, and even at that, it's just, this is really interesting.
It's also just so Japan, just looking at this game.
it is. This just basically screams, like, to the idea, it's like, what this is, what for Japanese like gamers would like.
Yeah, I just love seeing like the seeing soccer or football as it is through the Japanese anime lens. Just because you don't know, I mean, you know, soccer as it was is absolutely huge over here in the UK, but I can't really think of like any cartoons or anything like that which is based off it, which is odd because I assume that would also be big over here. So there, it's just weird seeing these like weirdly proportioned Japanese characters and you know, playing with these like superpowers, and it's all got loads of RPG stats in it and all the rest. And yeah, I think if you're half interested in the sport, this game is probably worth a decent chance. I mean, it seems like it's going to be a fairly cheap way to jump into it, and it's going to be the full-fledged original game, so you're going to get a lot of content out of it. And I imagine this is a sign that the series from this point on is going to see some sort of support in America. So I guess all the big games from this point on will be released over. I'm not sure they're going to have to bring the ones in between over because it is story based or not beforehand, but yep, I think this is the sign that from this point on Azuma 11 is a worldwide franchise.
I've got to ask, Lewis, have you played any of the Azuma 11 games?
I haven't, unfortunately. I mean I'm tempted to pick this one up.
I played the third one.
Oh, okay.
On Blast. I played quite a bit of it, yeah. It's a very interesting game. It's just, it's all touchscreen controls, and it's very awkward at times. And I'd say the RPG elements of the third one didn't really make much of an impact in the actual game.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I'm sure it can't be any more awkward to play than Kid Icarus was for a left-handed person.
Yeah.
Which I have to confess here is the situation I find myself in. So if anyone was struggling with Kid Icarus in the first place, if you're left-handed and you have to move around with the bloody buttons on the right-hand side instead of the D-pads, that game is torturous to play, but I still really love that game.
It's a really good game, really good game. Just the controls ruined it a little bit.
Yeah, kind of liked it, almost in spite of itself. I really like that game, and I still play the multiplayer on occasion. However, this next piece of news is something which came only from the Japanese conference, which is they're going to do a Wii Sports Club Wii U bundle. I thought it was something they would eventually do. So they're going to package they're going to have the downloadable Wii Sports games as of yet included on the console itself. They're going to include a Wii Remote Plus and a Sensor Bar. And it's not for a huge amount more than the original bundle, so it's for 30,000 yen. And so yeah, it's kind of like how the Wii was positioned with Wii Sports. We now have a Wii U with Wii Sports. But I don't believe it comes with Nintendo Land or anything like that, but it has the gamepad in there, which won't be seeing a huge amount of use of these sports games. But yeah, it's an interesting way to package the system, and it will be interesting to watch how it sells.
Do you think it would be wise to actually, with all the bundles that we've gotten both in Europe, the States, and in Japan, that this would be smart for the States, or would it just add more fuel to the fire of consumers confused as to whether this console is, you know, with the gamepad, just a peripheral or a new console?
I think the tricky bit is, yeah, I don't think it would fly quite as well over here, purely because the gamepad looks even more not needed in this package. However, I think if they include, say, Wii Party U as well, or even if it's Wii Sports and Wii Fit, just because, yeah, the sports games obviously don't use it very much because it doesn't need to. It wouldn't make sense to use it. But it doesn't make that they're not good games. So, I mean, it's almost an argument, but which is a different discussion altogether, whereas if they would not make the gamepad mandatory, doesn't mean cutting support out for the system, but it would give them the ability to sell the system without it and just let people buy it when they need it or feel they want it. But yeah, I'm not sure it would do as well as over here, unless they did get to a point where they did start selling systems without gamepads, and then if they did, this would just make too much sense not to do. But yeah, it should be interesting to see how this system sells in Japan. If it does sell very well, I assume they will try it elsewhere. So the next thing they have is some new gameplay of the Monolith game so far known as X.
Yay!
Yes. And it looked fantastic. I just want to put on an editorial point of view there. And so this wasn't a trailer as such. It was purely unedited footage of a battle scene where it looked similar to Xenoblade. You're fighting a monster of your team, but at some point in the trailer, he wanders off and jumps inside a mech to continue the fight. It all looked very exciting.
As soon as that happened during the gameplay trailer, once you hopped into your mech, and I'm hoping this actually has, you know, four-player online cooperative, not just local. Once that hopped into the mech, whatever, and just starting wailing.
But yeah, no, I mean, I was very impressed with how the mech mechanic worked. But I couldn't quite figure out the advantage of not being in it, and why he had to wait when he did to jump into it. Because it seemed to be just kind of there waiting for him while he started the fight. You could see it as the camera panned around. So I wondered if there's like a certain meter you need to build up before you have enough energy to use it, or just using it itself burns out energy, or something. You can only stay in it for a certain amount of time or something like that. But there must be some sort of advantage-disadvantage system that they've not talked through yet. Like, why would you not want to be in that mech if you have the opportunity to? And also, I kind of assumed that when you wanted to use your mech, you would just kind of call it, or you would transform into it or something. Or even like in the Xbox One Titanfall game, it would just kind of be like, you would just shoot down from the sky and land next to you. But it's interesting how he did run up to it and it was there. It didn't seem like he had anything to do with it being there. It's hard to tell because we didn't see what happened before that video rolled. He might have, flew it there and jumped off first, but it'd be interesting if you can only use mechs. You just actually, use mechs which are around you, opposed to having a mech yourself.
Maybe, the like you said, it probably, you can have a certain amount of power to actually use the power of those, like, to use those mechs.
Yeah. But, any more information they give out about how you just use those mechs in the system and how they transform, and if you unlock those abilities, which you assume you probably do, because imagine if you get the first one, a fairly early one, on, and you can just, fly where you want, or you can drive around and all that from the get-go, that was going to be pretty crazy. But yeah, I'm excited to find out more about this, and is this one confirmed for this year? Or is there a question mark there?
It's still confirmed for this year.
It's confirmed. Well, that's pretty awesome.
We're more likely seeing this thing probably released in the fall anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And so we got one final game to talk about, which is a game which is definitely confirmed for this year, which is Bayonetta 2. So we had a glorious new trailer, and we had some interesting explanations for what of the fact that Bayonetta 2 is the sequel to Bayonetta.
Yeah.
And some other interesting tidbits from Mr. Iwata himself.
Oh, he's trying to confirm, like, yes, this is a sequel. I'm like, oh, tell me, oh, you don't say.
Yeah, that's just the way he said it. It's like, introducing Bayonetta 2, the sequel to Bayonetta. Yeah.
That's like...
Genius.
It's like, there's only these two games in the whole franchise. It's doing, like, no spin-offs, nothing else. Yeah. And it's got number 2 at the end of it. It's not like, Bayonetta, Angels of Death or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll do that when Star Wars Episode 7 comes out. The sequel the sequel to the original trilogy. Oh, really? I didn't know how to count.
So, yeah, this game continues to look pretty crazy, which is good. It's good to see that nothing seems to have changed from, like, the drive or the creativity behind this game from the original. It looks like it's... it is the true sequel, which is no reason why it shouldn't be, but it's just reassuring to see it and to hear it, and just to kind of experience all the craziness is going to be just as crazy as the game was before, if not even more.
It's reassuring to know that the playable character in this game is Yugi Moto, if everybody knows. If you catch my reference.
Yeah.
Seriously, you didn't give it away right now. The kid that you're seeing in the trailer, remember, is a second playable character as well on there, is wears this necklace that looks like a Millennium Puzzle from Yukimoto wore from Yu-Gi-Oh!
No, I can't say I quite picked up on that one.
Oh, dude, like the whole internet was just popped up with that, whatever, and memes on there. I had to share those on there if I can find the best one.
Yeah, but Bayonetta 2 is a very interesting game in the sense that it's one of the very few games that I could see, oddly, as a system seller for the Wii U. Mm. In terms of the market that Nintendo's actually trying to go after with this system, in terms of what we know as, in quote, gamers, this is one of those titles where people are actually looking at going, you know, why isn't this on my system? Am I going to have to buy a Wii U to play this?
They're still arguing about that.
No, but that's the good thing. That's the conversation we want them to have, because if their conclusion is that they do want to play this game so much they end up buying a Wii U, then that's the perfect sort of game to publish for Nintendo. And so it's bringing in a crowd which isn't necessarily enticed by Smash Bros. Or Mario Kart. Unfortunately, I mean, it's not like, at least we haven't seen that they're going to follow this through with other games of a similar nature, but if they do have similar stuff planned, it could be a way to get through that traditional gamer who has kind of lost interest in the usual Nintendo franchises.
I'm really glad they're not dumbing it down just like the Wii U audience.
Yeah, that too.
Original, yeah. Keep it just like the original. I'm really happy about that.
And I think that's going to about cover it for our wrap-up of the Nintendo Direct.
A pretty decent Direct, too.
It was, yeah. And especially when you look at it from all the different regions in terms of what did come out. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff to go over here, and it still boggles the mind, at least for me, how they keep all this under wrap and they only announce it all on one certain date, which they only announce a day in advance. And
well, for a couple hints, though, for anybody who, when those directs come up, is like a day or two before the direct, Sakurai, Platinum, Next Level, or no, Level 5, all these, you know, bigwigs and developers were retweeting the direct, and that's usually a big hint, and like for sure that one of their games is going to be shown.
It is, yeah, that has seemed to have come true on at least a couple of occasions now. So we'll move over now to our final segment, which is our community comments corner. And so we've collected your comments that you sent us from the Infendo.com website. And Harrison, would you be able to read out the first question we have?
Yes, one that's actually for you, Lewis. I have a question specifically for you, Lewis. Oh, this comes from Risen Devil. He writes, I have a question specifically for you, Lewis. I see that you're a game designer / maker, but it appears from your website that all you've done is mobile games. With the praises from indies about ease of use in regards to Unity, is there a reason you haven't jumped onto the eShop with anything?
It's a question I should have been expecting, but I wasn't quite. The honest answer to this question is, he brings up the point of Unity, which is very good, and Nintendo also confirmed that they have something they call the Nintendo Web Framework, which lets you use HTML5 type projects and convert them into Wii U projects. And that is something which is enticing to a mobile developer like myself. And it's the sort of thing which would entice me to make a game for the system. I mean, the reason why I think a lot of developers in the position like mine aren't doing things for the Wii U currently is in terms of a risk factor. Specifically with a console, there is upfront payments required. You still need to go out and get a developer kit. You still need to do those sort of things. There's always the hedging your bet system or sort of thing. I mean, unless you manage to get some sort of Kickstarter together and it to be a huge success, you can't just kind of say you're going to release a game on all the big systems, because you're going to need to have dev kits for all of them, and it's costly. And although they're all kind of working to get to some sort of standardization of a platform you can develop for, they all are different currently. And so there's time you have to spend on making your engine work on all these various different platforms. And so although it is a lot to do with money, there's also a lot to do with time, because like myself, most indie developers have a normal full-time job, so they only get to do their development when they have their free time in the evenings and so on. And they can only really focus on like one core platform or one core engine at least. which usually leads them to things like these mobile phones and tablets, because there's a lot of middleware currently where you can design a game once and it will run on an iPhone and it will run on an Android tablet and a bunch of other different things. And there's minimal testing. I mean, in terms of cost, all you have to do is go out and buy like a cheap phone or a cheap tablet for each thing you want. And that's relatively a cheap thing to do. But these are very promising things that Nintendo have put into place over the last year and before that. And we have seen a big movement of indie developers move towards the eShop. And there's a large amount of indie eShop games which are scheduled to be released for the Wii U for this year, which is great news. And to ultimately answer the question, those things that they're doing with the Nintendo Web Framework and Unity are things which have piqued my interest. They are things that I have taken into serious consideration. And I've not officially announced what I'm doing for my next gaming project, but it isn't going to be a mobile affair like my previous have been. I'll be able to talk more about that in the short future, which will be quite exciting to do. And it's the sort of project which hopefully Nintendo fans will be able to enjoy as well. But yeah, no, it is really good to see Nintendo do these things. So I'm excited as a consumer and developer itself that they are.
It's one thing on Nintendo that we like to have, whatever we have, you know, we have Lewis, our resident game developer, to give us all the insides and everything.
It is quite interesting. As I said, I have taken a proper look at these platforms, to say the very least. What you can do with them is very impressive. And it's also quite interesting to... I know of certain eShop games which are coming out. I know what tools those developers are using, and I think I've bumped into a couple of them on forums before. And it just kind of reveals another element to the story of releasing games on systems in general, really. But it's really cool how just your normal everyday people are creating games all by themselves in today's world. We'll jump on to our next question now.
This one comes from Lou, and he writes, interesting article. Maybe the podcast can give thoughts on this angle. And the article he provides is from Fool.com, and the title of the article is, Three Ways Nintendo's Fear of Privacy Shaped Its Business. Basically, the article just lists off about three different reasons why, you know, Nintendo's strict policy on, you know, defeating game piracy. And I'll just go through basically the three bullet points of what they... It's a very lengthy article, but one of them they say, like the bits on here is like, number one is proprietary software designs, two, proprietary hardware designs, and three, ignoring online multiplayer. I was only going to get a chance to skim this, but I am very well known about like Nintendo's piracy, piracy stance, but what do you have to say about this, Lewis?
The hardware designs part of the piracy concerns is the most obvious one out of the three. And I think it's most evident with, say, the DS system. So it's a system where you've got two screens, you've got the touch screen, and some things which weren't quite as standard at the time, like the microphone. That's a system which is really tricky to emulate. Not in terms of power, but just in terms of recreating the experience on a different device. I mean, if it's on the PC, you would, in theory, have to use a mouse cursor to click on the bottom screen while you use a keyboard for the buttons, and it's going to be awkward. It's going to lose that Nintendo magic. And it's not like a game you're going to be get running on a phone very well, because you're going to have to shrink those screen sizes down and so on. But it also comes down to things like the Wii with the Wii Remote. You could argue that they use such an interesting control scheme because how are you going to mimic that? You're not going to be able to mimic a Wii Remote on a keyboard or a third-party controller. So it's proprietary hardware design which can only be done on that hardware. It's interesting to try to decide how much of that is in terms of trying to, you know, fend off piracy, or how much it is just their philosophy in game design and hardware design. But I do think they do put a fair bit of credence in piracy, especially how they were kind of burned off the GBA era. There is a lot of piracy around that, and I think they were they've always been very wary on the console side. Of course, with the obviously with the N64 keeping two cartridges, it was a lot harder to pirate a cartridge than it is to burn a CD. The GameCube had the smaller discs. I mean, even the Wii was probably the easier one, but I think it could read a standard DVD. But that was where the software came, because it didn't read standard DVDs by default. And so that had to be cracked to enable that pirate type of piracy. But it does look, going through the evidence, as it were, it does look like Nintendo does put a lot of emphasis on their system designs to make sure that it's not a system, or yeah, it's not a system which can just be replicated or can be stolen on by someone else, whether it's someone trying to hack another system or trying to literally play ROMs on another system, or potentially in the sense that they don't want a third party, or sorry, a Sony or Microsoft to be able to just, you know, copy their ideas directly. They're going to need to have that same hardware software stuff they devised themselves. So no, I do think it's a really interesting article.
The way they've shaped, I mean, their business model though, is that they, obvious thing is they've been heavily against piracy. I mean, that's the duh moment there. Like you said, it has kind of cost them in the long run, you know, one being with the 64 era where they just stuck with cartridges. And it didn't really necessarily hurt them as much with their handheld, because I feel like piracy is more prone when it comes to handheld, just because it's easier on the go and that is able to kind of get behind without any fear, like, you know, with any fear of trying to be caught. I mean, not to say that I'm not engaging just to support this for some out there, but as this is kind of like Nintendo's catching up, they're becoming a little bit more realizing the point where, since they've been behind on, you know, dealing with that, they are realizing the fact once they're getting these new hardware out, you know, with discs that hold more data, or, you know, hardware that's able to, you know, bigger hardware, they're able to see more people like pirate them.
How about you, Colin? Is there anything in particular that kind of comes to your mind in terms of Nintendo fending off piracy with their designs?
Well, it certainly is a good point. I just think they like to stick to their ways. I mean, they use cartridges years, and in a sense they still do, you know, work to the handhelds. But, I don't really know. They definitely like to keep things different. The designs, which mean that it's harder to emulate in such a way.
Yeah, definitely. But the thing which kind of confused me about this article is kind of how its tail ends and how it finishes about Nintendo's lack of proper online multiplayer infrastructure.
Yeah.
If anything, that would, in my mind, be would make the system easier to pirate opposed to harder. I mean, for, say, an Xbox or a PlayStation game where you're going to be wanting to play this game online all the time, because the online multiplayer is its biggest draw, then you can put systems in place to check the game's authenticity on that side. Whereas if you don't have any systems in place, then you can't check on that side at all. I mean, if you're not giving the user a real need to make sure they're signed in online on the system, that's a real easy way to make the pirating of the system a lot easier. It doesn't need that latest software update or to the OS or the game itself, or it doesn't need to communicate back and forth. It's a lot easier to, you know, break through those systems. So that end bit did confuse me. But then again, it is something that Nintendo is doing a lot better at nowadays, in terms of they are giving people a reason to check that they're online on their 3DS. They got the spot passes, they got the eShop, and there's been a fair few decent upgrades to the system through those updates. And in fact, actually, the 3DS is a fantastic example, because it has those OS updates which download in the background. And it was the first system, I believe, to do that. So in sleep mode, it downloads that firmware, and you just need to press a button to finish the installation process. And I bet that is being huge, defending off piracy to that system. And so I think we've kind of exhausted this one as much as we can.
Enough, it seems.
Yeah, so would you like to finish off with the final comment we have, Harrison?
As well, I will. this one comes from Devin Shadow V. He writes, what would be your most memorable moment when Nintendo was the king in the king of the gaming world? And I'm guessing he's referring more to the last half of the 80s and the early 90s. For me, though, my most memorable moment when it comes to when they're the king. I mean, it's really when you go back, whatever. I mean, it's early 90s. You, as a kid, when I was on the playgrounds, you know, I had kid, you know, you were either a Nintendo kid or a Sega kid. And it always led to a lot of teasing or close to even our young age, you know, expletive-lated arguments between on the playground and all. It just, I think that was probably my favorite memorable moment because it was that time when the first time Nintendo was really challenged as far as a game, like, you know, for having such a huge hold on, like, you know, market share. At that time, when I was a little kid, you know, everybody played at Nintendo, one with my NES. And this one, once you had the Genesis come in, it really, you had to choose a side. And I think that was the beginning of that point where I just realized it was, you know, I'm sticking to my guns with the company that, or a game maker that I loved with its previous console, the NES, and still continue to love with the Super Nintendo. That itself, I think, was probably my most memorable moment because of the tension that came into it. Now, today, is that you're kind of like, yeah, there's more competition, and obviously Nintendo doesn't have that market share anymore, but you just don't see that as much today right now, what I'm seeing.
Sure. I mean, I don't think we have to look too far back as an example of when Nintendo was at the top of their game. Because I think if we look at, say, the early parts of the Wii generation, Nintendo was ahead by a long stretch in terms of console market share. And there was a real big buzz about Nintendo in general. I mean, it may feel like a cheap answer, but just purely things like Wii Sports. Everyone wanted to play that game, even people who didn't want to play console traditionally. And just be able to get a load of people together. And not just games like Wii Sports, games like the WarioWare for the Wii as well, Smooth Moves. That was a game you could get a whole bunch of different people around, and you could just chuck that Wii Remote back and forth, and everyone was excited to play the Wii. It was, I mean, they weren't there for the entire of their generation, but that there was definitely a big period in time where Nintendo was, you know, the big dog with the Wii. That was cool. It was good to have that really, that fascination back about Nintendo and have that passion about Nintendo, not just from the Nintendo hardcore, but just, you know, people in the media, people on the street, just friends and family alike. So that's a recent example I have. I do have another one, but I'll let Colin have a go first.
Well, see, for me, I was born in 1990, so I missed most of the golden generation, as it were. But my first, most memorable moment, I think, was back in 97. I just turned 7, and my brother let me play Super Metroid for the first time. And I beat that game, and I was so proud that I actually managed to beat it at that age. So, yeah, to me, beating Super Metroid for the first time was easily my most memorable moment.
That's pretty awesome, and yeah, and I mean, I think it's almost bizarre trying to think back about a newer generation coming in and playing like those classics, you know, later on when they're not, you know, the games of the time, and yeah, playing them as retro titles or just, you know, older titles. But it is a testament of just, you know, how well they were designed, because they have survived that test of time.
Yeah, they're still very playable today.
Yeah, those Nintendo classics are very easy to go back into, whereas a lot of those games in those in like the early 3D generation and some point after are just a real pain to, and they're just slow and clunky and messy, and it's weird how some more simplistic Nintendo-like charm from the original Nintendo and the Super Nintendo can really be real polished experiences even today. But in terms of another example of when Nintendo was in there, was Nintendo was king, was the quote, in the gaming world, memorable moments, I'll have to go back to the original Pokemon games. Because I remember playing this as a kid with the original Game Boy. I might have had a Pocket. Actually, no, I might even have had a Game Boy Color at the time, by the time the games came out over here. Playing Red and Blue, with a link cable with other people, just trading Pokemon and battling them, there was nothing quite like it before that game arrived. And it was, I mean, it was one of those school fads, which, you know, was now a game. And it was just amazing, and it was just like discovering these things for the first time. You can't recapture that experience replaying, you know, the newer games if you had played one previously. But just playing those games and not knowing all the different monsters in there, and being amazed when you traded something and it started evolving, and it was just crazy. Just the amount of people playing that game at the time. It was almost like some, you know, how online games are now, when, you know, you have an almost endless cast of people to play against. Back in the day, it was a lot harder, obviously, to get these multiplayer sessions going, but for me, at least, and for the era I was in, Pokemon was a game that just so many people had, and because it was portable, they were carrying it around with them. You could just walk up to people, start talking about it, and the chances are they might have a Game Boy in their bag with a link cable, and you could just start playing a game there and then. And it was very cool to just battle against your team you trained yourself in, that, you know, the RPG-like style that Pokemon is. So that's going to be my, well, I guess my second pick of memorable moments when Nintendo was king. And that's going to conclude our community comments section. We are now, I mean, we did have an overflow of comments previously, but we've almost used them all up again. I will say once more, if you could please send your comments either onto the Infendo website itself, if you find the article relating to this podcast, then chuck a comment down below. Or if you just happen to be listening to the show now and you're not at your PC, if you can send an email at your nearest convenience to contact@infendo.com. We appreciate any and all questions we get, and most of them do get read onto the show itself. I do ask if you can try and just keep them simple and to the point, and just base it around the one question itself. It just makes it a lot easier for us to read them out on the show. And with that, we've come to the end of the show itself. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Infendo Radio.
Later, everybody.
Bye.